Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 263 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. And today my guest is Brooke Lively. Now, Brooke is the CEO for a company called Cathedral Capital. And I think that what she and her company do is providing the missing piece to understanding the financial picture of our law firms that we are trying to manage. You know, the vast majority of us have a bookkeeper, we have an accountant, and as you're going to hear from this episode, that's two-thirds of what you need, because those two individuals or functions tend to be backwards looking. They look at what has transpired and make sense of what has transpired, but there's nobody who's giving you that forward-looking understanding of what your law firm is or what it could be. There's nobody providing the financial officer or the chief financial officer function to your law firm. And that's what Cathedral Capital does. They provide fractional CFOs to law firms. And in fact, they provide a fractional CFO team consisting of a group of people that help you pull all this information together and to use your resources most wisely. So I think it's the missing piece of the puzzle. I think it's really something that all of us, or many of us, should consider. And I'm delighted to bring to you today my friend, Brooke Lively. Brooke Lively, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me, Neil.
Well, I'm delighted that you could join us today, Brooke. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, let's see. My name is Brooke Lively. I own a company called Cathedral Capital, and we are a group of, I call ourselves financial Sherpas, and our job is to help law firms scale the mountain of profitability.
Well, I love the metaphor. Let me drill down just a little bit. Why Cathedral? What's the reference there?
Yeah. Okay. So this is probably the worst name ever. And, hey, I'm all about transparency. Yeah. I was working for a hedge fund at one point, and we were talking about going out on our own and starting our own fund. And we came up with this name, Cathedral Capital, and it references Cathedral Lake in Colorado and also a street I lived on, Cathedral Avenue.
Okay.
And so we got the URL CathCap. Nothing ever came of it. And then when I started this company, all of a sudden I had clients and I needed a company. And I'm like, I kind of have this thing sitting over in the corner. And
let's blow the dust off of it.
Yeah. Dusted it off, dragged it out, kind of thinking that it was going to be a temporary thing.
Yeah.
And here we are, 8 years later.
Well, look, companies have been built on less. And sometimes those kinds of decisions work out in your favor because for whatever reason, it resonates with your client.
Well, and it doesn't resonate with our clients as much as it resonates with me and my story.
Yeah.
Cathedral Lake is supposed to be, theoretically, it's billed as a medium hike. It's not considered a really hard hike. It's medium. It's 7 miles round trip. No, to climb up to it and back, because it's also 7,000 feet, 5,000 feet of elevation change. And the first time I did it, I went with a friend who was not a very experienced hiker. I mean, she had done it before, but, you know, and so I didn't make it. And so the next time I went with my sister, who was a very experienced hiker who had done this hike a lot. And she could tell me things like, okay, we're going to do three more switchbacks, and then we're going to come to a field of flowers. And you get to walk through this wildflower field. And you're going to do that for about 5 minutes before we start climbing again. And she could really tell me what was coming up. And because she knew me, she knew when to push, when to pull, when to let me rest, and when to make sure I kept going. And we have realized that in our jobs as CFOs, in helping clients become more profitable, we're doing the exact same thing.
I was going to say that's the exact metaphor for what you do. You are telling the clients what lies ahead, where they can rest, where they can find enjoyment, where the challenges are going to be. It's kismet. It's a perfect reference to what you do.
It really is. So you kind of have to get to know us to understand our name.
Well, let's talk about us use guys a little bit and tell us what's involved in that Sherpa effort to help attorneys through the financial trips that we have to deal with.
Well, our company has evolved to some extent. We started out as originally being fractional outsourced CFOs. And we did this because especially small law firms, you know, under $10 to $15 million a year, don't have a dedicated financial person who can help them with strategy and managing their bookkeeper and really talking to the tax accountant to understand and discuss what the strategy should be and then implementing it. Not to mention doing the analysis. When I ran a law firm, I ran it very much by the numbers and was amazed when I started talking to other law firm owners that were like, no, we don't know that. Wait, you look at numbers to make those decisions? Mm-hmm. And as we've done this over the years, we've realized that really law firms need more of a team. So now anyone that works with us gets an entire team. So they have a team lead, they have a CFO, they have an analyst, they have an accountant, and we also have someone who will help with technology integrations to make sure that everything is talking to your books. And all of these people don't work for you full-time every month, but they rotate in and out to make sure that we are really serving all the financial needs that you have at any given point.
Well, I think you've really hit on a sweet spot here of need for attorneys. And let me just use my own experience as an indication of that. I have a bookkeeper. I'm very happy with the bookkeeper. She's been on as a guest of the show back when. And the bookkeeper, you know, performs a very specific function with respect to managing and helping me manage my QuickBooks accounts. I also have an accountant who has a very specific function in terms of preparing my taxes and doing some other principally tax-related work on behalf of my firm. And I guess I always thought along the way, somebody would be holding my hand and telling me, you know, what to do financially, what can I afford, what can I proactively plan for in terms of deductions as an example, or what could I do with respect to staffing. And God love both my accountant and my bookkeeper, I'm not getting that expertise. And that seems like the void that your company fills.
It really is. You know, you talk about hiring. The people that you have on your team are absolutely necessary. And we don't replace those people. We work with them. But your accountant's job is to maximize deductions and minimize taxes. And sometimes that's not beneficial to your company. We were working with a company at one point and we needed to take out a loan. And we knew we were going to take out this loan. And so I was on the phone with the accountant saying, yeah, we need to pull some revenue, some income from next year into this year. And he's like, but that's going to raise your tax bill by blah, 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 tens of thousands of dollars. I'm like, right. However, I would rather pay an extra $20,000 or $30,000 in tax and be able to get this $5 million loan that's going to do these other things. So I was looking at it very much comprehensively about what the plan was for the company. And your bookkeeper is awesome at keeping you straight. They keep records and they tell you how much cash they have. But neither one of those functions really look forward. They don't.
Yeah, they're both backwards looking. They're looking at what has transpired, not what's ahead of you.
Exactly. And your accountant may look ahead a little bit in terms of tax, but both of those people tend to be more conservative. Law firm owners tend to have a higher risk tolerance. So, you know, when you're talking about hiring somebody, that's a risk, right? I would posit that sometimes not hiring someone is even bigger risk.
Sure.
You know, you need someone who's going to say, this is the time, and work through the numbers with you and say things like, they need to bill 4.3 hours a week to pay for themselves. Do you have an additional 4.3 hours of work that they can do? And by the way, Neil, that's just a random number.
Yeah.
It's about what it usually is, but it is a random number.
Right. Well, you actually kind of mentioned in passing a couple of things that I think are not something that we as attorneys often think of. Prior to the availability of funds during the pandemic, I don't know that I talked to any attorney who ever considered applying for a loan.
Oh, gosh, yes. You know, one of the things I talk about all the time is that you should have access to 3 months of operating expenses as a minimum. And when I say access, I'm very specifically not saying you should have 3 months of cash in reserve. You should have access to 3 months. And that's a mix of cash and debt. And you should have a line of credit. And especially if you are like a PI firm that has to finance these cases for long periods of time, you really need to have loans set up, ready to go, to be able to allow your law firm to really hit its stride and to achieve your goals.
The other aspect that you touched upon that I think we as attorneys don't give enough consideration to is being able to understand the data that you already have. You know, I kind of thought somewhere along the line somebody was going to hold my hand and help me read this P&L statement or help me, you know, understand my budgeting and whether it was working for me or not. And I think I'm like a lot of other attorneys. I don't know that I'm getting that kind of financial education, which is critical to being able to guide your firm.
Yeah, it really is. So one of the first things that we usually do is we come in and we change somebody's chart of accounts. And what that is, you know, the buckets where you put, for lack of a better explanation, where you put your expenses. So all those categories on your P&L are actually your chart of accounts. And we come in and we redesign that. And people are like, well, my accountant says I don't need to do that. And that's right. For tax accounting, you don't. But what we do is managerial accounting. We want you to look at your expenses. We want your P&L to tell you a really good story so that it tells us how to move forward. So that we can sit down and say, okay, Neil, we had budgeted. By the way, we don't call them budgets. We call them profit plans because budgets are awful. And doesn't a profit plan sound like more fun? So.
Yeah, much more positive spin to a budget sounds like it. It's a diet as compared to your menu.
Exactly. And, you know, as entrepreneurs, and in let's face it, if you start your own law firm, you're definitely an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs are more about the possibility than prohibition. Yeah. So we're very careful to use language that will appeal. So, but we'll sit down and we'll say, okay, we thought this was going to happen, but this other thing happened. And then we take it a step further. Is that good? Is that bad? If it's good, let's figure out what actually caused the good thing to happen so that we can replicate that every month. If it's bad, let's dig down and find the root cause so that we can fix the root cause so that it doesn't happen again. So, and when I say root cause, I use AR as an example. When people have a lot of AR,
accounts receivable,
people immediately say, oh, you need to call and collect it. Okay. That's putting a Band-Aid on the problem. That's not finding the actual problem.
And just to help, just to make sure that we're all on the same page here, because you know this is kind of Greek to a lot of folks, okay, including myself. AR is money that you've earned that you haven't yet collected.
Correct. It's hours that you have billed. You've sent the invoice to the client, and they're sitting on it, which they love to do, because unlike the electric company, your mortgage company, you know, the person who has your
they always think they can string out those attorneys, right?
Yeah. You're not going to come turn off their electricity, their TV, or repo their car.
Right. Now, unfortunately, that is a reality. So,
yeah, as an attorney, you have very little leverage. And so when we talk about accounts receivable, people usually are like, well, I just need to go collect it. And I'm like, yeah.
That'll help.
And we need to fix the root cause. And I believe that AR is created in the sales call. Mm-hmm. And it's created because you aren't setting expectations of being paid, and you're not backing it up with procedures that allow you to get paid, and you're not memorializing it all in your fee agreement.
Well, okay. Guilty, guilty, and guilty. So...
You know, I can fix that for you. That's an easy fix.
You know, it's so funny when I talk to folks like yourself, and you know, I don't want to set myself out as being some kind of, you know, guru in these things. But when it comes to making mistakes, apparently I am the master of doing so, because you can see that clearly, just as you said. It's not clear about what happens if you don't pay on time. I know that for the longest of time, I resisted charging any kind of interest to a balance owed, and I wasn't consistent in terms of my follow-up. I didn't have a system that enforced consistency with respect to getting paid for work that you had done. And so there were often times when I have an AR that would linger for weeks, if not months. And it's a terrible feeling. Sometimes you think, am I going to have to write this off? And what is it about me that I'm letting this happen?
So, Neil, I want to go back to something that you said. You talked about what's going to happen if you don't get paid. I think that is an approach that a lot of attorneys take. And I think the approach should be, you are going to pay me. Instead of assuming there's a possibility that you might not get paid, let's assume that you will get paid.
Sure.
Let's work from there.
Let's state it in terms of this is the process.
This is the process. Yeah. And for us, it's a 5-part process, right? You get an initial retainer equal to 3 months, equal to the first 3 months of work. Okay.
Yep.
Do you want me to explain why 3 months? People usually ask me that question.
Sure.
Okay. So let's say someone hires you on April 1st. You work all of April and you send them a bill on May 1st. I don't care what your bill says. Your client thinks they have 30 days to pay. So you work all of May. Client doesn't think they owe you anything. You're now in month 2 of billing. On June 1st, you send out that bill. The client now thinks that they owe you money. We're 2 months in. They think they owe you money. And they may or may not have paid. So you're working all of June while you're trying to collect that money that the client just now thinks is past due. And so really, if they don't pay that bill in those 30 days of June, now you know you have a deadbeat client.
Right.
But you've worked for 3 months in order to establish that. So you need an initial retainer equal to the first 3 months of work. And let's face it, most attorneys do the vast majority of their work in the first 3 months. Now, if you're litigation, it's the first 3 months, then it's quiet, then it gets busy again at the end as you go to trial. But, you know, first three months are busy. So the second part of the puzzle is you need an evergreen retainer.
Right.
And what this is equal to an average 3 months. So here I am at 3 months again. And we do this. People often ask me, they're like, okay, well, they've already proven they'll pay with that initial retainer. Why do I need an evergreen retainer? Well, the evergreen retainer is because a client can and will stop paying you at any time during the process. And the reason usually has very little to do with you or the case. So we want to maintain a certain amount of money in the trust account so that you're covered. The third part is accept credit cards.
Yeah.
Take payment timing out of the client's hands. I'm going to tell this story. And I have told my best friend that I use her as an example, but I went to visit her. She lives in Pennsylvania. We came in one night. She opened up a drawer. She took out probably an 8-inch stack of mail and started opening it. I'm like, what is that? She's like, it's about 6 weeks of mail. I'm like, what about your bills?
I know.
And she said, almost everything's on autopay. I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah, I have a son like that. It just tips me, you know, like, dude, open your mail.
Open your mail. So she says these are one-off bills. So she opens it up. Most of it goes in the trash because it's junk mail. She's left with a small pack of open stuff. And she goes and she puts it back in the drawer. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Those are the bills that need to be paid. She's like, I've done enough work. I'll pay them another day. So if you are an attorney, this is what is happening with your invoice. Don't kid yourself. And if you're going, oh, I work with businesses, it's totally different. Here's how it happens in a business. You send the bill on the first. They usually do two check runs a month. You're never going to hit the first one because they think they have 30 days to pay. And at the second one, they add up all the bills. They look at how much cash they have. And you may or may not get a check. So we say, take payment timing out of the client's hands. And you do this by having in your fee agreement a credit card authorization form where you send the bill to the client. They have, we usually suggest 10 days to dispute it. And then at 10 days, if they do not dispute it, if they say nothing, you are authorized to charge their card. It's huge.
And some clients with that understanding will allow that just to happen. Because it's easier for them. For them, this is not a punitive or a measure to correct a problem. For them, that's the way they're going to pay their bill. They're just going to wait and let you take the money when you need it.
Oh my gosh, Neil, when I have people send me invoices that I have to go in and actually pay, I'm like, good gosh, can't you just draft my bank or can't you just put it on the credit card that I'm going to put it on anyway? Like, why are you bugging me with this?
Today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. For many years, marketing companies have focused on funnels that run for a short time, often leaving dozens of leads behind that didn't make a decision yet. Spotlight Branding has found a better way. It's called a content loop, and it's changing the way attorneys think about their marketing. This system nurtures your leads in perpetuity, with quality evergreen content that elevates your credibility and helps the rest of your marketing actually work. If you're interested in learning more, head over to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, to learn more about the content loop and how it can revolutionize your law firm's marketing. Spotlight Branding, more referrals, better clients, higher return on investment. Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress.
Okay, so I do want to talk about the last two pieces. So the fourth piece of the puzzle is have a stop work policy. It can be anything. The one I love was the firm that went to Office Depot and bought a $2 box of red rubber bands. And when someone hadn't paid their bill, they put a red rubber band around the file and no one could touch them.
Like that.
It's simple, it's easy, it's low tech. And then the fifth piece is all of this. Every single bit of this goes in your fee agreement. The state bar wants you to have a fee agreement. Let's make it a contract that benefits you. Put these things in there. Have the client understand how this is going to happen and move on from there.
You know, I think a lot of attorneys have little bits and pieces of this that they've stumbled upon or that they've learned from a mentor or they, quote, borrowed from their previous firm, you know, but very few have a comprehensive end-to-end view of this based on the expertise of somebody with knowledge.
Yeah.
So that's, I think this is really clearly where you bring value to the table that's unparalleled.
Well, and it's, you know, most law firms have, I believe, a collection rate between 75 and 80%. Clio puts out a report every year. They say it's 86% in 2020. I think they're on crack. They must be including PI firms in there or something. If I can do nothing but put a fee agreement in place that gets you paid, that raises you from an 80% collection rate to a 90% collection rate, on $1 million law firm, on a law firm billing $1 million, not collecting, just billing $1 million, that's $100,000 that we'll collect just by rewriting your fee agreement. No extra work, no extra people, fee agreement.
Hey, look, I found $100K.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was in this drawer and it belonged to me all along. Right?
Right. And instead of collecting it, you'd been worried about it, waking up in the middle of the night or thinking it was a piggy bank. That's the one that always cracks me up.
You'd actually were loaning it back out to the client.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. AR is a loan you have made out of your own pocket at 0% interest.
Well, look, we went to law school not because we were accountants, but even I can understand that.
Yeah, you went to law school because you were promised no numbers. And I'm sorry to say, when you own your own law firm, there are a few numbers involved.
Now, speaking of the numbers, you also mentioned something that the techie in me it lights up my neurons, maybe not everybody else's, but a member of the Cathedral Capital team is focusing on tech integration.
Yeah.
And I think this is kind of like the magic sauce here, maybe just because I said, because I'm a techie and that's music to my ears. But tell me a little bit about why that's important and how you address that.
So One of the ways that you become more profitable is you become more efficient. And, you know, there's an expression, what can you automate, what can you delegate, and what can you eliminate as a way to make your life better? And we believe in automating as much as possible. So most people, and if you don't, I would definitely encourage you to run out and get one. Most people have a practice management software.
Sure.
Your practice management software will connect to QuickBooks. It will push everything from your practice management software to QuickBooks so that your bookkeeper doesn't have to hand key anything. QuickBooks will hook up to your credit card company and download all the transactions. Will hook up to your bank and download the transactions. There are practice management softwares that will hook up to your credit card company, your credit card processor, so that you can initiate credit card charges from within your software and not go to a separate place. So you can, for instance, set up a payment plan for a client in your practice management system, and it will automatically charge them on the appropriate days. These things are huge. Hooking up your CRM, your client relationship management, so that thing that you use to keep track of potential clients, you can hook that up to your practice management system. Do you have all of those different pieces of software that you use talking to each other? Because they can share an immense amount of information with each other and really cut down on the amount of manual work that has to be done. In addition, when you start hooking them up, you start getting better data. And while you might not care about the data so much, we care about the data because we can take it and use it to make you more profitable and to make better decisions.
And it's that data that generates the reports and the graphics that you then use to interact with your clients, the law firm owner, to help them understand what their true financial picture is. I mean, so often what happens is we see a little slice of it. I mean, we can look at a report generated by QuickBooks or whatever accounting software you're using, and that tells you one piece of the story. And we can look at, you know, the reports generated by your credit card processor. If you use LawPay, like I like to recommend people do, you get another view of that financial picture. But you're not pulling those things together in a comprehensive fashion and getting the true end-to-end picture of what's going on.
Well, and you said something that's really important. You said picture. We have found that our clients like to see a graph as opposed to just black and white numbers.
Sure.
Because with a graph, we can show you the trend. We can say, this is what's happening. We can put in what our projections are. This is what we wanted to happen. This is what actually happened. This is where we're trending. Because if we know where we're trending, then we can project out where we're going to be. So don't you want someone to show you not just where you've been, but where you're going? And how to impact that?
I do. And what I'm struggling with to some degree here is hearing folks out there in the internet world saying, well, you know, I can boil all this down to a really simple mantra. Get more clients and reduce costs. Isn't that really the basics of what we all need to do financially? Why do I need a fractional CFO to adhere to that, you know, to that mantra?
That mantra has some assumptions that are flawed.
Okay.
So first of all, getting more clients sometimes can make you lose money faster. If you're not properly priced, if you are not an hourly attorney that is properly paying their attorneys, you're not properly priced. And so more clients mean you're going to lose more money more faster.
Yeah.
If you're flat fee, same thing. You may be charging the wrong rates. And the second part of that is reducing expenses. There are certain expenses that I don't ever want you to reduce. So for instance, marketing. If you reduce marketing, it's really hard to get new clients.
Sure.
And that's one of the things that people are like, oh, I can cut that. That's easy to cut. Well, that's, as my grandmother would say, cutting off your nose to spite mm-hmm. your face.
Yeah.
Those are your future clients right there. And sometimes it's good to spend a little bit more. You're a techie. Sometimes it's good to spend some more money on a piece of technology because it's really going to impact your business in a favorable way.
Yeah, for sure. So let's kind of circle back to the chart of accounts that we alluded to before and consolidation of those things. Like I've always felt that the more specificity I can get my chart of accounts, the better insight I'm going to have into my financial picture. Is that misguided, or are we rolling some things up into a more generalized account that gives a summary view?
So a little bit of both.
Both, okay.
So let me explain. We believe in running a law firm on the rule of thirds. One third of the revenue goes to the people doing the work. One third of revenue goes to your overhead. And one third of revenue should really go to profit. So when we talk to our clients, we will roll up their P&L to show a revenue line, a payroll line,
mm-hmm.
an overhead line, and a profit line. Now, we can expand those and we do get more specific. You know, we want to know how much we're spending on marketing. And there are all kinds of things that we do break out and dig down further. There is a point where you can break down your chart of accounts to be so detailed that all of a sudden you can't see the forest for the trees.
Guilty again.
it becomes overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's just why we create.
And I'm not consistent, by the way. You know, in some branches of the tree, I have a lot of subcategories. In other branches, I've given up. Now I'm not going to subcategorize those. So
you're like, it's just a big lump.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will tell you, if you ever have a category that is just one vendor.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's too small.
Okay.
That needs to be rolled up into something else. The idea is to not look at your P&L by vendor.
All right. So let's kind of wrap up here and talking about just how does working with Cathedral Capital manifest itself? So come on board as a client, you know, we have some kind of arrangement that I obtain services from you. Mm-hmm. How then is the interface between your company and my law firm? What do we do together? Is it we meet for Zoom lunch once a week, or just how does that go?
So we are very tailored to the law firm. And what we do is we evaluate together because we believe that the client is 100% part of the team. So we evaluate together how much help you want or need. So the more we work with you, the more times we meet, the more we can get done, mm-hmm. the faster we can move. And not every law firm needs to move very fast. So we have some firms that meet by Zoom with us, usually like every other week. We have some firms that have a standing call at a certain time every week. So it's what works for you. Mm-hmm. You will usually meet with your CFO twice a month. And then on those calls, everybody leaves with homework. You leave with homework, we leave with homework.
Okay.
Our homework may be having our tech person call your bookkeeper to get something hooked up. It may be having our analyst work with somebody on your team to pull information out of your practice management system. Or really, it's nice if you just give us our own login so we don't have to bug anybody on your team.
Well, again, I was going to ask if that's part of the feature where can I entrust you with your own logins to these things, and what risk am I assuming there?
So yes, please give us logins, and you are assuming virtually no risk. You know, of course, all of my people have had the most detailed background check. I know if they got a speeding ticket in college.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we have insurance, just like you do as an attorney. We never have access to your actual cash. We just have access to information. So whether it's in
I'm not giving you access to my bank account so you can write a check. I'm giving you access to my QuickBooks account so you can see where I'm wasting my checks.
Exactly. Now, you may give us view-only access to your bank account.
Yeah.
Because we might need to be able to go in and do things like pull your statements. But yeah, you're just giving us access to view information.
How about retrofitting data? I mean, do I have to go back and change my data for 2021 going forward? Or do I start from here going forward? Or?
That is always a discussion that we have with the client. Is it worth going back and fixing to the beginning of the year? Or do we draw a line in the sand and move forward?
Yeah.
It's rare that we will go back and change something in a previous year. Right. Now, if we change your chart of accounts, it automatically changes it for all of history.
But you've already done all that work the previous year. It's already been reported. You've already paid your taxes, presumably.
Right. And we have printed financial reports. Like, we've saved the financial reports that match the way your tax return.
Yeah.
So we've got that. So if we change it, we still have the data we need.
Well, listen, Brooke, you've convinced me.
Awesome.
You've convinced me. It's clearly a function of need on my behalf, and I'm sure for many others. So tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they feel similarly.
All right. So the nickname for our company is CathCap. The first four letters and then the first three, because I could not get the URL back all those years ago. So the best way to reach us at CathCap is to go to our website, CathCap.com, and you can reach out to us through there. You can always send me an email. My email is Brooke@CathCap.com.
That's Brooke with an E?
Brooke with an E. You can find us on Facebook. We usually do a Facebook Live every Friday afternoon. So we're on there as Cathedral Capital Inc. Same with LinkedIn and Instagram. Don't know why I'm on Instagram, but we're on Instagram and we're on YouTube.
So basically anywhere you can type in CathCap, we can find you.
Yeah. We are Cathedral Capital on social media. So you can find us. And, you know, Neil, I'll tell your listeners this. If you go to our website, CathCap.com, we have down towards the bottom of the page a free four-part video course that really goes into detail into a couple of the things that we talked about today and then gives you some actionable advice to make your law firm more profitable. So people are welcome to go try that.
Awesome. I'm just looking at it now and right there, free
four-part
video course right next
to you. You get me for about, you know, however many hours coming straight to you, straight to your inbox.
Awesome. Well, Brooke, listen, this has been really, really informative. I think this is a niche. It is a segment of the financial aspects of running a law firm that is underserved. And I wish you the best of luck with it. And hopefully our audience will take advantage of your expertise. And I thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Neil. I really appreciate it.
Well, there you have it, law entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Daylight, and Spotlight Branding. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.